Greetings, Earthlings, and welcome to Are You For Real? My name is Tom, and with me, as always, is Grant.
What up, what up?
So, we are back to our standard format here, in that I, Tom, will be kind of introducing everything and offering my piping hot takes on what Grant's serving up here. And Grant is going to be the one who has done all of the thorough research for our topic this week.
Well, and I don't want to oversell it. I don't know how thorough it was, but yeah, I got some hot takes here.
Grant, ever the modest person, I'm sure he is. He's looked into our subject.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that too, but I don't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Sure. Go ahead and let's talk about it.
Well, as our listeners probably know from seeing the title, we're talking about Dr. Stephen Greer here today. And it's kind of a big one. It's a big topic here. I kind of want to, I don't know, it's multifaceted as well. He's had a few movies out and everything. So I know we were discussing here. My idea was to watch, because he has a lot of, like, at least interview segments with a lot of military personnel and everything. But then, so we watched a few of them, and we're probably going to go over them in this episode here, depending on how much time we have. And I was thinking we could go through all of them, because I want to see what kind of narrative comes out of that, see if it's just like a bunch of random information. You know, I think, you know, that's really the interesting part to me, is talking to firsthand witnesses and seeing how believable they are, how trustworthy. And we'll get into it, but that's kind of where Stephen Greer is staking his claims, that he's got a bunch of very reliable witnesses, you know, in positions to know.
Right.
But then I realized there's like 62 videos on there. So that would, we'd basically be devoting the whole year to Stephen Greer, which is probably not gonna, I don't want to go down, you know, down. Well, basically, I just don't want to devote a whole podcast to.
Look, dude, we don't want this to be the year of Greer. Okay. That's exactly. That's look, let's get it out there. We don't want this to be the year of Greer. I mean, we want to devote some time to this fellow, because he has, he's been making his mark, as Jason Robards said, or I'm sorry, Tom Hulce said in the Parenthood movie, make your mark, which is exactly what Dr. Stephen Greer is doing. So,
yeah. And I really do. I mean, that was one of the reasons I wanted to do a podcast like this with you, because I, you know, I want you to have the time to devote to listening to some of these testimonials, and I just want to be able to talk to you about them, or talk to somebody about them. I can't just keep this all in my head here.
I know, man. Like, and who will listen? Honestly, when we say things like this, who will listen? You know who listens, Grant? Our beloved listeners, you guys. Absolutely. Out there that are listening to this all over the world. We love you. We see you. You pop up on our map. We have this thing where we can check on our podcast and see where people are listening. And you guys, like, represent, like, all sorts of countries from all over the world. And we love you guys.
Yeah, we're really proud of that. And proud of you guys for listening to a couple dirtbags talking about this. No, I'm just kidding.
Ever modest. And again, can't say this enough. We thank you for sticking with us through the lackluster audio that's happening right now. And we've posted a picture of these obnoxious headphones that I'm wearing, these gamer headphones that are that I got on Groupon, and they said they were studio quality, but they are not studio quality. So I can't hear myself talking right now. And I've listened to myself the last couple episodes, and I want to punch myself in my own throat because of the way I sound. So
I think you're being modest, man. It sounds pretty good. It's not bad.
Well, I'm watching Grant on Skype here, and he's got a sweet mic. So I might have to invest in a sweet mic too, to give me the luscious sound to my voice. But speaking of, wait, did you just hear something, Grant? Speaking of sounds. I don't know. Was that coming from me?
We getting Zoom bombed again?
Beep 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 beep. I think it's UFO news.
That's right. I got some UFO news here. My lovely wife actually just sent this to me shortly before we started recording right here. This one's hot off the press, the internet press. It comes to us from, pulling it up here, from independent.co.uk. Are you familiar with this publication?
Sounds pretty independent, man. Is that like the independent skateboard company?
Very similar name, but yeah, independent, the paper.
Well, as long as they're not dependent on anyone, I'm totally cool with them.
Right. I've lost it on the screen I'm looking at right now, but basically it doesn't have a date for the article, but it said basically like, so I think it's like 15 hours ago it was posted. This is by Adam Smith, one of the founders of our country here. sorry, I don't mean to be making fun of names here. Adam Smith wrote this, and the title of the article is "There Could Be More Than 30 Active Alien Civilizations in Our Galaxy: Major Study Finds." So, I thought that was pretty compelling here.
What?
So it says a new paper looked to understand how many planets in our neighborhood could be home to alien life, by assuming that life develops on other planets in a similar way to how it develops on Earth, and matching that to planets that could be home to similar evolution. I don't think we've gone in depth about it, but I know we've at least mentioned the Drake equation before, which is pretty interesting.
You took the words right out of my mouth. It sounds like they've taken the Drake equation to its next logical conclusion. That's cool. I wonder how they went about, if they've refined the Drake equation in some way, or if we just have more data with which to plug into the Drake equation.
You know, it doesn't even mention the Drake equation in the article, but yeah, I think it's just that we have so much more data about the surrounding galaxy to answer some of these questions. Because when, you know, at the time of the Drake equation, it was just speculation that there was even planets outside of our solar system. But now we have ways to detect that. We know that pretty much every star has planets around it, if I'm not mistaken.
You know something interesting, not to get too sidetracked here, but just the word data. I think we actually, I read an article or I saw an article somewhere that we actually get our pronunciation of data from Star Trek, The Next Generation, from Sir Patrick Stewart's pronunciation of data, because everyone prior to that pronounced it data, like normally, like, you know, let me check out the data here. But if I remember this article correctly, Sir Patrick Stewart has almost single-handedly influenced people's pronunciation of the word data/data. So anyway, let's not get too sidetracked with that. But, and if I'm wrong, please, someone shout at me over the internet.
Now I feel like I should call it data, but I got loyalty to my man Data.
Darn right, man.
That probably was my introduction to the word.
That's Lieutenant Commander Data to you.
Right. Okay. Right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be disrespectful of his Starfleet rank there. But so anyway, the paper found that there could be dozens of active civilizations waiting to be found in our Milky Way, but it could also shed light on our own fate and suggest our prospects for long-term survival are lower than we may have thought. Quote, there should be at least a few dozen active civilizations in our galaxy under the assumption that it takes 5 billion years for intelligent life to form on other planets as on Earth. Christopher Consolice of the University of Nottingham said in a statement.
Nottingham.
Quote, I'm feeling very self-conscious about my pronunciation at this point after three errors. But quote, the idea is looking at evolution, but on a cosmic scale. We call this calculation the astrobiological Copernican limit. The astrobiological Copernican limits come in two forms. One is the weak limit, which suggests that intelligent life forms on a planet anytime after 5 billion years. The other is the strong limit, where life formed between 4.5 billion and 5 billion years ago. Well, it says years ago, but I believe that means years ago. And the new research used the latter and also assumed that these new species would need to develop in metal-rich environments. This is because human beings develop near a metal-rich environment, what with bands like Slayer, Metallica, AC/DC, and Black Sabbath.
And yeah, let's not forget Death Clock.
Death Clock. Yeah. No, actually, this is because human beings developed near a metal-rich environment due to the metal present in the sun. Previous research from 2012 suggests a suitable minimum stellar metallicity required for the formation of planets that would be similar to Earth. Researchers were then able to use those assumptions about where life may form to understand how many planets in our Milky Way would be able to satisfy those conditions. Detecting any civilization in our galaxy is strongly dependent on how well we can pick up signals being sent into space. This includes radio transmissions from satellites and televisions. If these technological civilizations last as long as ours, which has been sending out signals for the last century or so, then it is estimated there could be 36 ongoing intelligent civilizations. And I think that's funny. I just want to mention real quick that I don't know if arrogance is the right word, but it's just funny how we're like, yeah, well, if they're up to our level where we've been doing this for 100 years out of, what was it, like 4 billion years of life or 5 billion? I mean, that's so, you know, it's the last minute on the, what was that, the cosmic clock or the cosmic calendar.
The cosmic, yeah, Carl Sagan's, I think it was Carl Sagan's cosmic calendar. At least that's where I first heard the phrase. And I think we're the last 10 seconds. I don't even think we're the last minute of the last. Right.
I mean, that's for the whole galaxy or the whole universe, right? Since the Big Bang. But yeah, even if you just did it on an Earth time scale, like whenever Earth is considered formed, but it's pretty insignificant. Just for how long human Homo sapiens have been around, I think the last 100 years is a pretty insignificant chunk of that, you know?
Oh, God. It's an itty bitty sliver of a fingernail. Yeah.
But, so back to the article. While that might be the case, interacting with them would be difficult. The average distance to any possible civilization would be 17,000 light years, which makes communication very challenging. The other scenario is that we are the only intelligent life in the galaxy and that civilizations die out before we can detect them. Our new research suggests that searches for extraterrestrial intelligent civilizations not only reveals the existence of how life forms, but also gives us clues for how long our civilization will last, Professor Consolise said. If we find that intelligent life is common, then this would reveal that our civilization could exist for much longer than a few hundred years. Alternatively, if we find that there are no active civilizations in our galaxy, it is a bad sign for our own long-term existence. By searching for extraterrestrial intelligent life, even if we find nothing, we are discovering our own future and fate. So he's kind of taking my point of view there, where you know, we're just a blip right now.
Yeah.
Technological society, if you consider computers and radio waves and, you know, really messing with the fabric of reality, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Well, I think it's pretty apparent, almost, I want to say undeniable, even, that we're at a turning point, or we've reached a turning point, or arguably that we reached a turning point in the 1940s with the development of the atomic bomb, where our fate is in our own hands as a species. So, right. The ability to destroy ourselves, the ability to mold, essentially terraform, we can essentially terraform our own planet, one way or the other.
I mean, some other turning points, I'm just kind of talking off the dome here, but, yeah, when was the atom actually discovered? Do you know? Would that be?
I don't know that. I don't know when the atom.
Probably
was.
1800s, right?
I don't know if it was late, that long ago.
Right, I mean, late 1800s. Yeah, so that's a short time. It took us a while to figure out how to split them up once we knew they were there.
Yeah.
The other thing is DNA. I mean, we're able to go in and see how life itself is programmed, which is pretty pretty incredible, you know. But it's been for such a short period of time, again, relative to human existence, basically. So anyway, the new study was led by the University of Nottingham and published today in the Astrophysical Journal. This is not the only recent news to imply the development of intelligent life in the galaxy. Scientists have found a potential habitable planet called Proxima B around the star Proxima Centauri, approximately 4.2 light years from the sun. It receives comparable amounts of energy to that the Earth gets from the sun. If there is liquid form on the planet, it could harbor life, but researchers said there is still much to be done before that can be confirmed, such as checking for the atmosphere and chemicals that could support life. And that's a pretty abrupt ending to the article there, but pretty interesting. It's kind of, you know, if you think about the Drake equation and stuff, and then you know that there's planets everywhere. I mean, there's so many stars out there.
Just in our galaxy alone.
I forget who it was, but there's like a famous quote, like, where are all the aliens? Because from what we know, it should just be teeming with aliens all over the Earth, you know? And maybe it is. That's what we're looking into today. If you listen to Dr. Greer, then that's basically the case. But
and also, if you listen to astronaut Edgar Mitchell, he seems to think that that's almost an inevitability for certain civilizations anyway. But we'll get to him at some point.
I want to talk to you about that, of course. I wanted to go over, you know, just give an idea for listeners that aren't aware of it, of who Stephen Greer is. And I'm kind of starting at back at the beginning. The first I became aware of this guy, and he really kind of renewed my interest in the UFO phenomenon, was when he did an interview with Joe Rogan on the Joe Rogan Experience on March 3rd, 2013. It's episode 331. So, you know, that's a while ago, right? 17 years or so.
It's 2003 or 2013.
Oh, I don't know. I've got short-term memory loss here. Yeah. So, okay.
Maybe it was either 7 math. Or
yeah. 17 it was 7 years ago. Okay. 20. I was like, sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Dang.
It's a pretty big topic. So I wanted to kind of start from the beginning, and you know, we can look at the claims he's making here. Obviously, his stance has probably evolved a little bit. I'm thinking we've kind of discussed this, but you know, we'll probably do an episode on his movie Unacknowledged, because I want to watch that with you. I think I tried to show it to you before, and about halfway through you're like, nah, man, this is ridiculous. So
I don't know, man. I think did we, and which one did we watch? Didn't we watch that one in its entirety?
I don't know if
or
we got
did that, I bail.
Yeah, I think you might have just lost interest on it, and we were just like, you know, we weren't really paying too much attention or anything. And like I said, I do want to go through these testimonials, maybe instead of doing all 62 of them, because that would take quite a few episodes, kind of go through them myself. And then, you know, we can pick and choose which ones we actually want to discuss. They're all there for everyone. If, you know, you just look up Stephen Greer's page on YouTube, I'll probably post it in the future that has all the list of them and everything.
There was an hour and a half interview with my main man, Richard Doty.
Yeah, I want to get into that too, because he. Jump into up here, but I want to say, yeah, this is so. This perspective is all it's old information. This is 7 years ago, and you know, I want to look into what kind of has come true or what he's been able to prove since then, because 7 years is a long time for all the talk he was doing. I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself again, but we'll go kind of through the interview and a lot of the points he made and everything. We can kind of
I think that's a good jumping off point, man.
It's a really good interview though. It's dense, man. I've been spending some time with it. It's like it's basically he kind of takes over the conversation, Dr. Stephen Greer, and that's hard to do with Joe Rogan, you know, because Joe Rogan usually is the one that kind of dominates the conversation. In my experience. You know, you get him going and he'll just start explaining stuff to the listeners and to the interviewee. But
have you ever done DMT?
Right. DMT during this interview for sure.
He does? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it was funny because when I was looking at this, then I found an interview with Steven Tyler that Joe Rogan did. And it was, I think it was
of
like
Aerosmith? Episode.
Yeah, it was like episode 140 or something. It was Joe Rogan discusses aliens with Steven Tyler, and Steven Tyler's like, "You got to watch Unacknowledged. You got to watch Unacknowledged." He said that like four times or something, and then and Joe Rogan was very dismissive of it. He's like, "Oh, is that Dr. Stephen Greer guy? Like, yeah, there's all these guys like going out there. It's basically an industry now, and he's like monetizing and he's making these claims." But we'll get into his claims and stuff, but. the thing is, like, Joe Rogan seems like so respectful of him in this one, especially because I think he's very similar to Tom DeLong, like, in almost every way, you know, like all the claims he's making, his affiliation with high ranking government people in the know. He presents himself a little bit differently, but it seems very similar. And so I think I speculated maybe even on the podcast before, but I think that's why Tom DeLong was so like taken aback about how hostile Joe Rogan was to everything. And, but yeah, Joe Rogan at that time, he was just like, nah, I've researched aliens and I had a show deal and blah, blah, blah. And, it just proved that it's all, you know, nothing pans out and there's no such thing. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, I respect if Joe Rogan's opinion evolves on stuff, the more he does. At the time of this interview, I got to say, Joe Rogan was saying that he was just starting like development on a sci-fi show looking into this kind of stuff. So he might have been kind of honing his chops and trying to make connections and get some interviews and stuff too, you know? Because Stephen Greer does have a lot of connections and, well, anyway, obviously he's got like 62 testimonials, you know, just on YouTube. But so to make a long story short, it is easy for me to dismiss Dr. Greer as he drops nonstop extraordinary information in a deadpan way with lots of technical language. So he's a pretty smooth talker and he's pretty impressive. His vocabulary is very good. You know, he uses a lot of technical terms. I'm just kind of reading my notes that I was jotting down here while I was listening to it. He's very confident in himself and paints himself as a kind of a hero who left medicine. He says that he loved helping people in order to pursue the greater purpose of informing the public about what was going on. He's so modest and so, I don't know. He's like the perfect salesman con man, you know, kind of like, obviously I'm a little skeptical of Dr. Greer at this point, but I think he's worth looking into anyway.
Well, that kind of begs the question. What does he have? What's he a doctor of? Is he an MD or is he like a PhD in something?
I believe he's an MD. Yeah. He worked in an emergency room. He was in the ICU, you know.
Okay.
He brings it up a couple times. He's like, you know, I'm just here. Like, I'm covered in blood. People are saying I'm not even a real doctor. And I'm sitting in the emergency room covered in blood all day. And
well, if he's an ER doctor, then he's an MD. Okay.
Yeah. He also likes, you know, like I said, he likes to use a lot of titles and credentials to reinforce his arguments. And then I wrote it here, you know, overall, he sounds very similar to Tom DeLong, which I believe is why Tom DeLong was so surprised when Rogan was so dismissive of his testimony on the show. I have to say that in this interview, as opposed to DeLong's interview, Rogan is much more diplomatic, but also is asking a lot of pointed questions that Greer sometimes gives somewhat plausible answers for. But he also seems to kind of change the subject and control the conversation, control the narrative pretty easily. And all the things he claims are very hard to prove, which is, you know, which is what makes a good conspiracy theory, really, I guess. He throws a lot of Greer throws a lot of large sums of money around, you know, and all the projects he's involved in order to spread his message.
Like he's flashing cash on Joe Rogan's show.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, hey,
he just pulls out a fat wad. He's like, look,
let's see what Benjamin says about this.
What does Alexander Hamilton have to say about the possibility of UFOs?
You know, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but he's like, I don't even really get into this. I kind of get into the foundation of his arguments and stuff and his evidence, but, you know, he knows a lot of researchers that just got stopped by some mysterious thugs or whatever when they were researching different type forms of energy and new technologies. And then he's like, yeah, we're actually developing, like, one of his projects seems to be that he's much like Tom DeLong. He's developing new technologies and he has, you know, getting like developing research grants and stuff like that. You know, it's just very, very important stuff. Like it seems like he has a lot of, what do you call it?
Bravado.
Yeah. I mean,
entrepreneur.
I mean, a lot of people say like he's very, self-important and somewhat arrogant and very self-confident, you know, which also I would say is that a good thing if you want to spread disinformation, then you influence someone like that who is a very good speaker and they would spread it around as gospel. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Like if the government wanted to influence him and get him interested and then just let him loose and he's going to do the rest. Kind of like what people accuse Tom DeLonge of, just being taken advantage of and spreading disinformation without his knowledge.
I see what you're saying. So he's an unwitting, useful idiot.
Right, right. But I don't know. But he's very, you know, because both him and Tom DeLonge, both Greer and DeLonge, they seem very self-confident and like, yeah, I'm knowledgeable about this stuff. You know, I'd be able to see through it. I'll get into that here a little bit too. These are just kind of my thoughts, and then we'll get into the actual substance of the interview. But yeah, he presents himself as somewhat of a martyr, you know, how, you know, he had to give up so much income as a doctor, and you know, people have come in, tried to stop him, had conversations with him, that he was offered control of a $2 billion account if he dropped his research. And then when he refused to do that, then they approached his wife and tried to influence her, you know.
Who's they?
That's a good question. This kind of shadowy organization, you know, the military industrial complex that's off the books but still using taxpayer dollars, and we'll get into that in a little bit here too. But what throws me off is that everything he puts out to the public seems somewhat like advertising for stuff that is behind a paywall. And I'm just beginning the research on this, and this info all comes from 2013, so I'm sure the story has advanced since then. And I think we will have to watch his movie Unacknowledged, discuss that pretty soon here in a future episode. But I visited his site because he keeps saying, you know, go to my site seriousdisclosure.com, and it has links to all these documents and blah 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 blah, and then his app, you know, because he's, what we'll get into too is he takes people out to the desert apparently to communicate with these craft and make them appear and access, but he keeps saying to, you know, you can get the ET contact app that he's pitched like two or three times during the interview. And so I finally go on the site to like, oh, let me get this app and see what's going on here. And it's supposed to inform you about how to connect psychically with these things. But then I find out that it costs $10, you know, so which is more than I'm willing to spend at it right here with the budget on this podcast. But
And to be fair, $10 is not an exorbitant amount of money, but if you get a bunch of people to do it, you know, and I understand he's got overhead, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
To his credit, $10 is not like, I don't look at $10 and see a massive gouge taking place, but still. Okay. And just out of curiosity, what desert does he take people to? Is he California, Arizona, New Mexico? Do you know?
I think he's based out of California from the way he was talking, but I'm not 100% sure on that. Like I said, I've just been getting the research here, so I'm not sure. But
well, yeah, Grant, you and I
shooting up.
You and I were just talking about a camping trip, Grant. So
I have a feeling these trips might not be cheap, though. You know,
They're more than $10?
Yeah, they might be like 20, maybe even 30.
Oh, God.
But it might be worth, yeah, throwing some $10 at the Serious Disclosure Project and see what we can learn from that app, and see if we can go out to the desert and contact some otherworldly beings.
Oh, man, if we could do that on our own, too?
Yeah. I mean, everyone's got this technology. It's just thought, but we'll get into that here soon. And it's funny that you brought that up, because that's the next thought after saying all this about him and just kind of talking off the top of my head. I do understand, that's the next note I have here, is, however, I understand that you have to support yourself and projects like this need funding. And if what he's saying is true, it's I'm not sure what other options he would have. And if it is true, it's crazy, and we're living in like a whole false paradigm in our society here. But let's get into the substance of what he's claiming here.
I already want to check it out for myself, man. So kudos to Stephen Greer for piquing my interest in this.
Have you listened to the interview at all with the Joe Rogan one?
No, I haven't. All I've heard is some stuff about coordinated meditation, and I almost fell asleep immediately. But if it's true,
yeah. I think I was telling you earlier, I can't wait to talk about this with you, because I don't think I think you're going to be pretty skeptical here. It is a little new agey.
Well, judging by the soundtrack of the videos that we listened to, that I listened to, the interviews, it's massively new agey. But
I think a lot of the UFO culture might be kind of new agey, which is a good way to swindle people, I would say. I'm just talking in general. I'm not saying that everyone's being swindled or anything, but you know how it's, or like a culture, you know, it's like religion or whatever. Like everyone has the capability to empower themselves. I don't know. Is that even making sense?
It does. And the thing is, man, as far as religions go, I think it's the possibility of alien existence and that kind of stuff is more plausible to me than pretty much any other kind of religion. So,
yeah, I don't even want to take it there. I mean, like, I don't mean to put down any religions or anything. I don't know what reality is. You know, like when we started this podcast or when we started doing the thing, like I was getting pretty into that kind of thing and the power of the human mind and thought. Because, I mean, honestly, even if you just believe in science, this reality is insane. You know?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. So
who knows what, you know, what thought is or anything. That's very vague, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to believe. You know, maybe the human mind does have more power than we can understand. But just selling that as like that's the ultimate technology is being able to use thought, and it just seems like something that you could sell to people that want a different paradigm than the world they're living in, and you know, selling it to crystal type folks and stuff. I don't know. It's along the lines of magic and just how you can empower yourself if you just think the right way. You know.
Hey man, I play Magic the Gathering. Don't talk trash about magic. Okay.
Never, man. I love Magic the Gathering, but you know what I mean. But at the same time, there's lots of. I mean, this is ancient stuff, and the power of meditation is probably really true, you know, and the power of your own mind. So
don't doubt that one bit. I have absolutely no doubt. I've practiced transcendental meditation myself.
But enough talking about my own thoughts here.
Let's see what old Grierski has to say.
So I was kind of listening to it and just putting down notes, you know, what I thought was important to share. It's dense, man. He, like I said, he's just nonstop talking for about 2 hours and he's dropping some bombs, you know, like some plant. I mean, like I said, he's pitching a serious documentary quite a bit in this time at 2013. So I think he was basically this. It doesn't make sense with the timeline with Steven Tyler. So maybe this was another documentary he was working on after the Unacknowledged one, because he didn't really mention Unacknowledged by name or anything. They didn't really talk about that. So I might be getting it mixed up. Maybe, you know, maybe Joe Rogan interviewed Steven Tyler at a later time. But the thing is, in that interview, Joe Rogan was very skeptical and he wasn't talking like he had met Stephen Greer before or anything. So he barely knew who the guy was at that time. But then, Stephen Greer at this time during the interview, he's talking about the possibility of having recovered an alien body, which I believe has since been proven to be a human, like an aborted fetus, I think even, but it's basically like a little being with like an elongated head. And he was doing a bunch of tests. He said literally as we're speaking right now in this interview, like it's being analyzed and we should have some results. But Dr. Greer, he states he spent 10 years gathering credible witnesses. States has about 550 people at that time. And, you know, credible witnesses is basically like ex-military and government officials, as we've said. He is an emergency doctor in the trauma room, or he was, has had interest since he was a child in the UFO phenomenon. A family member was involved in the space program that took Neil Armstrong there. I think his family has some connection to Lockheed Martin, basically, from some other stuff he was saying later in the interview. He claims, I'm just going to go through the claims that jumped out to me and we'll get into a little background on them, you know, but he claims Gordon Cooper witnessed a UFO land in a dry lake bed and it was astronaut Gordon Cooper. You familiar with him at all?
I'm not, no.
I do link to, in this episode, I link in the show notes to an article about Gordon Cooper, and I watched a little video. I've seen him talk about UFOs before. He seems like a good guy, but he he doesn't quite even make the claims that Stephen Greer is making about him. But basically the story is that he videotaped it, followed military protocol, and or not videotaped it, but he and his crew filmed it, land, and sent it in, and then never heard anything about it again, you know. You know, Joe Rogan's asking, like, how did you become involved in this? And during the Clinton years, Dr. Stephen Greer did a briefing in front of the CIA director, Woolsey, who seemed completely in the dark to Dr. Stephen Greer. Greer says he thought he was being tapped to see, like, what he knew and kind of be fed disinformation. But instead, the CIA director seemed to not know what he know anything about this, and he quote, "How do we disclose something that we have no access to?" is a quote from the CIA director. So basically, you know, he's in the dark about it, and because Stephen Greer's telling him they need to disclose it. Greer states that Congress knew about him because the year before he had taken people out to contact these vehicles, and he claims to have it on tape. He said, like, low quality video, claims to develop some. So basically he developed some controversial protocols dealing with non-locality. He explains the universe has various dimensions at higher resonant fields than linear space time or electromagnetism that interface with coherent thought.
What?
Yeah. So that's what I say. He's got a pretty good spiel. Sometimes he sounds like he's in a Star Trek: The Next Generation episode where they're doing some techno mumbo jumbo, you know, just to explain how
sprinkle a little talk in there, just to go right over
in the sky. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But he claims to have developed technology, and we have these in classified projects now. He says, I think he means meaning the government, where you can have a switch that will interface with very intent thought. He calls it a citizens diplomacy project that he's heading, and that's taking people out to the desert to call lights in the sky, basically, with their thoughts. And I think that's what the app trains you to do, or claims to train you to do. But he says he, later in the interview, he says he has 100% success rate with it. There's never been a time he's brought a group out and they haven't seen something, so that's interesting.
Okay, so he goes out to the desert and they perform, what's it called? Abject thought, or no, intent thought. Is that?
Yeah.
So they essentially will these objects to appear. Is that the gist of it?
Right. Well, let me get into that too, because then he asked him, like, how did you discover this protocol or whatever? You know, Rogan asks him that. And this is a pretty long note here, because I wanted to get it all as he describes it. So Greer claims he discovered this ability technology when he was 17 years old, after he had a near-death experience that made him aware of, quote, the nature of consciousness and the non-locality of mind, and the fact that the mind is actually a singularity, that there is really only one mind, and it's just shining through various individuals appearing as many, end quote. He said this experience was very palpable, even though it sounds spiritual. He states that he was raised a devout atheist, so they didn't believe in any of that stuff, meaning his family. But when he realized this was real, he began to experiment with meditation and tried to access the single mind state. He claims to have had an experience where he was able to remote view deep space, and he saw an extraterrestrial craft, and he was able to make contact, after which the craft materialized near the mountain nearby him. He clarifies that this was not under the influence of any drugs or psychedelics and never has used them. And then Joe Rogan goes on a big spiel about DMT.
So, okay. That was my next question. I was, okay. So he claims to have been stone cold sober, put himself into a trance, which resulted in remote viewing of an object, and through his own sheer force of will, he summoned said object that he had remote viewed.
And I think I was rewinding it and typing it out and going back and forth on that one, because I wanted to get it exactly as he explained it. And
was this decades ago that he
it must have been about 20 years or so ago, because he said he was 18 when he did that. It was like a year after when he'd been experimenting with, you know, refining his meditation techniques and whatnot.
I want to see how old this guy is real quick. Hang on just a sec. I'm going to look it up. Please continue.
So basically the story that Greer tells, he believes in a deep state or military industrial complex conspiracy to hide the limitless energy technology that extraterrestrials possess from society, in order to maintain control over society, these entities. So he sees he sees like aliens as a benevolent creatures that are kind of worried about our. He thinks that basically they started noticing us when we split the atom and dropped atom bombs and immediately started weaponizing them, weaponizing the technology.
Okay.
He claims it started with government oversight with programs like Majestic, the Majestic 12. You've heard of that?
Yes, I have.
And he's also seen, I'm not sure what it has to do with anything, but MAGIC, M-A-J-I-C, is another organization. But these groups have kind of, quote, gone off the reservation with no congressional or presidential oversight. And now there's sort of a shadow organization with its own Air Force and Navy. And he makes this statement very clearly in the interview. He claims that there are links to the Rockefellers, and Greer is sure that Roswell was real. And Majestic hit the craft with electromagnetic pulse weapons. Claims Eisenhower's military-industrial complex speech was a direct result of these organizations separating from the government in a coup d'etat.
All right.
Yeah, so Eisenhower was kind of miffed about losing control of these projects, because he thought that they should have government oversight and everything. He also makes claims like when Rumsfeld was saying that there's just billions of dollars or millions that can't be accounted for in the military funding, like that's where these dollars are going to, basically. So basically they're eating up all this money and they're developing all this technology, but there's no oversight by Congress or the president or anything like that, or the people.
Okay, so is does Greer seem as though he wants more oversight?
Yeah, definitely. He thinks it should all be public and handled democratically. Again, like, I don't really get into this in the notes, but near the end of the interview, he starts moving it towards like energy and technology and stuff. And, basically he's saying, well, let me get into that here in just a second, because it's like two notes down. But then, because he's very confident about the whole Roswell thing and everything, he's like, oh, yeah, I have it from sources, I don't know. That's crazy. You got to listen to this, man. I don't know. I remember getting the impression, and that's why I was so surprised that Unacknowledged was not that great of a movie, because he's very compelling just to listen to him talk, Like, he spins a good tale, basically. Like, I don't want to be discrediting
him. Here's the thing, man. Here's my recollection of that movie. He seems like one of those people who's like, look, this is how it is. This is what's out there. This is what's happening. I can summon these things with transcendental meditation. I can remote view. If you don't believe it, that's your problem. You're a sheeple.
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah, somewhat. That's kind of how it's handled, And again, it comes into like, it makes me think of like cults and stuff like that, where this guy has the answer and you've got to do what he says or listen to what he's saying and disregard all the other information you have.
I'm not here to poop all over him, man. I just did right there, because that was my initial, that's my recollection of watching the movie. But I'm willing to give it another shot, he seems to have a massive following within the UFO community, and I'd even shell out $10 for his app to see what he's selling.
Right. Yeah, I'm interested in doing that too. I want to look into his website a little bit more, see what kind of proof he has. Again, those videos that we'll get into here in a minute. I think these testimonies are very interesting, but again, it's just fantastic claims. It makes me think of, and you pointed this out actually, like Richard Doty, right? Just because someone is from the military doesn't mean they're telling you the truth, right?
No. And that by itself is not.
I didn't even realize, but you were going through all the witness testimonies, and one of them is an hour and a half long conversation with Mr. Richard Doty.
on Greer's YouTube.
That's one of the guys he has that where he's getting this information from.
And just to be clear, for any of you who have listened to this podcast for any length of time, you'll know that I tend to give more credence to UFO sightings and experiences that have occurred to like military pilots who have been flying that have seen UFOs that have some kind of military expertise and people who are entrusted to fly multi-million-dollar aircraft just because that's what they're trained to do, and they're supposed to be the best of the best in terms of observation and identification. So but that in itself is not that badge or that the rank or whatever in itself is not as far as I'm concerned carte blanche to just start making fantastic statements. I think there has to be evidence beyond that too. The rank will get you in the door as far as I'm concerned. It'll creep the door open a little bit for me anyway.
Right. And it's hard to comment on because, you know, there are people involved with the military and stuff. You start asking about UFOs and they're like, oh, that I can't talk to you about that or whatever. And it's mysterious, you know? But then, you know, you watch that Doty movie and you realize, well, on the other hand, they could just be making stuff up and using that secrecy to say whatever they want. And they have the ability to kind of back it up. I don't know. That movie is crazy. Like, I don't understand why Doty is still
Mirage. You're talking about Mirage Men, just to be clear.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mirage I don't Man. Understand why anyone listens to Doty about anything at this point. Like, he says he was misrepresented in the movie, but the guy is just making up lie after lie, like, and proud of it, obviously. Like, he's doing a good job. So, I don't know. But that's where Rogan jumps in. Oh, well, the other thing I was going to say is another person that comes up in the conversation is Stan Romanek.
Stanley Tiger Romanek?
Is that his name? Yeah.
Yeah.
Starseed, as I know him. But do you – what was the name of that movie? We watched it a long time ago before we were doing the podcast. Right now.
Sit tight, buddy.
We got to do an episode on that because I feel like we keep bringing him up as somebody that is that we don't really trust.
I kind of Stanley Tiger, Stan Romanek. I kind of don't want to give him any more. What's it called? I don't want to give him any more airtime, but at the same time, it's just so crazy. I'm just going to say it because, you know, it's not like we have Joe Rogan's listenership or anything like that. We're not, and don't even consider this a plug, but the documentary is called Extraordinary, the Stan Romanek story.
Okay. Yeah. And I think it is interesting to look into it. Just, you know, we like to look into it, like why people believe certain things. And this guy seems to still have. Well, I don't know. This was in 2013, so I don't know if that movie was even out yet.
It came out in 2013, the documentary Extraordinary, okay. The Stan Romanek stories came out.
But yeah, Greer drops him casually too, because he's going over how like they're looking into abductions that appear to be alien, but they are really just like humans and people in this shadow organization that he kind of hints about. And you know, they have a lot of advanced technology like anti-gravity, blah, blah, blah. And they also have artificial and biological or something like that, like programming.
Wait, what?
Basically, he's saying that he's like, yeah. And then as an example, he drops Stanley Romanek, who seemed to have been visited by like a mechanical being that was built by him. You know, so I think he's talking about that little alien that popped its head up through the window or popped its head around the corner that he got a picture of.
It's called the Boo video. Yeah.
Yeah. So Joe Rogan, when he starts talking about Roswell and stuff, Joe Rogan starts asking him like, you know, what do you think about disinformation? Are you, you know, do you worry about disinformation? And then Greer claims that 90% of the information out there is disinformation, but of course he is not susceptible to it. Like, he's kind of fallen for some stuff at certain points, but he's, you know, he's got a clear head on his shoulders, so he's not worried about that, basically.
Well, he fell for whatever line Stan Romanek was putting out there, sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's very compelling if you want to believe him, but you kind of have to ignore some aspects of it for it really to be convinced. I don't know. It's tough.
Let me put this out there, man.
I want to believe that I could summon.
I just want to put it out there that I want to believe him. I want to believe that I could learn how to summon extraterrestrial beings through meditation. So my mind is completely open to that. I've said it. I think that would be awesome.
Hey, $10, man. You could take the blue pill. Is it the blue pill? And maybe your whole world will change.
So I don't remember. It's been so long since I've seen The Matrix. I mean, I've been living in it my whole life, but
right. So and then he makes an interesting point, you know, but I don't know what to think about it. But he says, do people really think that technology hasn't progressed since the 30s, you know, with jet engines, and the 40s, like car combustion engines? Obviously this is before Tesla was like really big or anything. Joe Rogan's making fun of electric cars or whatever, but now he's a big Tesla guy, you know, now that they make like a sporty car. So then he also, Greer also makes claims that the media is controlled and infiltrated by those same shadowy groups mentioned before in order to stop any real information from coming out to the public. So, you know, you could go on a show and start releasing this information, or, you know, he had I don't want to say the wrong station, but a major broadcaster like NBC or CNN or something, they came out to the desert with him and professionally videotaped these, and all the cameramen said, yeah, like, this is absolutely real. But then it somehow got quashed and never was released, and he was promised that he would get the tapes, but they, you know, they basically said, well, you can, I think it was NBC, like, you can try and sue us for them if you want, but we're going to crush you under our thumb, you know. So I believe we'll be able to discuss it in more detail after watching Unacknowledged movie, but though Greer says that he is not into conspiracy theory, his story is a pretty big conspiracy theory about shadowy semi-governmental organizations hiding zero energy technology from the public to maintain its grip on society, as I said. But he says it's not a conspiracy because he knows it's true because of all the people he's talked to and everything. And I wasn't sure how to work this in, because he starts mentioning like some of the real stuff out there, and people see it all the time, you know, which is really compelling. It's like the information's out there. You just got to know. And a lot of it's not real, or people just mistaking stuff, but then there are real ones, like the Phoenix Lights. He uses that as an example.
Sure.
And he talks about, yeah, like black triangles is a phenomenon.
I'm in agreement. I mean, I have to say I'm kind of sold on the idea that the Phoenix Lights is at this point unexplained. And, you know, I don't buy the flares explanation. Listen to our Phoenix Lights episode if you're so interested.
And a lot of people note that, like, it wasn't just like sitting there, like it did move off, or people saw it moving. It wasn't only over Phoenix that it was spotted. We kind of went over that too. But anyway, I found a couple interesting videos here when I was just trying to look at, cause they mentioned like looking at somebody, you know, Joe Rogan's trying to find some videos of these craft. I couldn't really find exactly what he was talking about, but I found a video. Is, there's a space station video with like three triangular craft zooming by, and it's pretty interesting. I thought it was compelling, so I'm going to put that in the show notes if people want to check it out.
And, what do you mean? To interrupt. What do you mean a space that, like, the International Space Station? Like,
yeah, it's like someone videotaping outside of the, like if someone had a cell phone or something, they were just at a port in the space station looking down at the Earth.
And is that the one where it looks like it changes direction rapidly?
No, they're just going straight, really, well, pretty quick, all in a line. one of them seems to like morph its shape according to the video. Like it turns into like a butterfly shape.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It's just it's interesting. Like it could just be debris or something like that. But when they slow it down, apparently they're all like triangular shaped. Could be some kind of spy craft or something. I don't know, you know, but it seems like it's out of space. I don't know. It's just interesting to see. I don't really have any conclusion like most things, you know, but I suggest the viewer, if you're interested in the subject, check that out and see what you think. I also found one that I thought was interesting, especially after our Phoenix Lights interview. It's a show. I kind of like it. It's on YouTube. I guess it's New York Post is kind of the parent of it. But so it has something to do with the New York Post. But it's called The Basement Office. And it's these guys just talking about UFOs. And they have a lot of nice photos and everything. And they have a pretty good discussion about this stuff. But one of the hosts, he talks about when he saw a black triangle in Utah. And basically, it sounds a lot like what we were hearing about the Phoenix Lights. Like, it looks like a carpenter square, you know. I know we weren't too clear on that. We got actually an email from a listener on there that was really cool. But
oh, yes. Thank you, by the way, to our listener. I forget his first name, but thank you, sir.
And basically, I mean, a carpenter square, it's – I didn't realize, like – that's what they say the black triangle is basically like a carpenter square where it's just like an L or like a V shape with a right angle.
Right.
Like two branches. Well, that doesn't explain it, but yeah, like two rulers, if you put them at a right angle to each other, with a bunch of lights running down it and nothing in the middle, you know? But yeah, he basically claims to have seen one of these crafts. So it's pretty interesting.
You know what, man? I think we just got to do it. I think we just got to go out to the desert and try and track these things down for ourselves, man.
Right. Okay. I guess
that'd be an awesome episode. As most of you know, we broadcast out of San Diego, California. So we're fortunate enough to have lots of desert, lots of hotbeds of UFO activity, such as you know, Nevada. And Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, I believe. Is that where Skinwalker is? I think it's in Utah.
Well, I think that would be great to bring everyone out. Yeah, we were just talking about it. Yeah, but definitely a camping trip and just stargazing would be cool. But yeah, we should look into this app too and see if we can summon something to come and scare our families and us. Or
yeah. Lines,
you know? Yeah. Apparently, you know, you psychically connect to it so you don't get scared or anything like that because you know they're benevolent. But I'm kind of hypothesizing here. So anyway, that's my introduction to Stephen Greer. And then we can start looking at some of these testimonials. Again, I want to spread this out over a few episodes and kind of take a deeper look here because I think he's interesting. And it kind of, you know, that's
oh,
like,
sure. Yeah. And regardless. Series. Yeah. I'm sorry, man. I keep talking over you. There's like a little bit of a lag going on in the Skype right now. I hope you can hear me.
Yeah.
I'm trying really hard not to talk over you. but yeah, and you know, regardless of this guy's truth value of anything he says, I don't think anything that I've heard him say is particularly harmful or anything at this point. It seems to be a general message of oneness and love, I guess. So
right. But also that there's a shadowy organization that's keeping the human race under its thumb, the development of the human race, and may destroy the planet, you know, unless these aliens come and help us or we find our own way, you know.
Well, that's a definite bummer.
Yeah, he said they're not going to come in and save us or anything like that, but you know, they're there to help us if we know how to ask, basically, or if we're ready.
That's the feeling I got, you know, a little foreshadowing from these testimonials that we're about to get into. Right? That's the feeling that the people who gave the testimonials, it seems that that's their feeling as well. They were not fearful or, you know, any of that stuff.
So just to give our audience a little background here. So I sent Tom the first three of these videos. Like I said, at first I thought we could go through all of them, but there's a lot of them here. So it would take us 20 episodes if we went three at a time. I don't know. What did you think of these videos here? These witness testimony, they're kind of short, right? I think it might just be an edited down kind of trailer.
for the whole, yeah, that's the impression I got.
I think you pay a subscription fee or go in. I'm going to have to find out here before our next episode, but, or you go in and pay to just to watch the whole interview maybe, or maybe pay a subscription fee. I'm not sure.
The original, well, I guess my initial impression was these are all either, you know, people in their 70s or 80s, all of them military connections, all of them either military pirates, military pirates, oh geez, military pilots, or like Edgar Mitchell, who's an astronaut. They're older gentlemen, and I didn't get the impression that I was being hoodwinked or anything like that. I'm not sure if Greer compensated these people to tell their stories or not. I'm not sure what kind of compensation, if any, they received from these, or if they go to UFO conventions or anything. But just, you know, it was like hearing a story from your grandpa.
Yeah, and
which in itself I find to be compelling, except for the time when my grandpa tried to convince me that jackalopes were real. I saw a jackalope hanging on my grandpa's wall. For those of you who don't know, a jackalope is a rabbit it's a taxidermied rabbit with antlers glued onto it. And it's kind of like a joke. Right. And
I was very impressed by the jackalope when I went and visited my relatives in Wyoming when I was younger.
Right. So anyway, with the exception of my grandpa's good-hearted ribbing of me about the jackalope, I tend to, you know, my grandpa was honest with me, and that's the impression I got with the testimonials that we're about to go into right now.
Yeah, it sounded it sounded like people just sharing their stories, you know, without anything to gain by it or anything like that. I don't think they were actually interviewed by Greer himself, at least the second two that we're going to go over. I forget the guy's name. I think it says it on there, but the guy that's interviewing them.
We'll include it in the show links, obviously.
Yeah. We'll have all three videos there. And the first guy's name is Frederick Marshall Fox, Lieutenant Fox here. Vietnam veteran. I seem to recall, I watched these videos a couple of days ago, and I was going to come back and make notes, but of course I didn't do that before we started recording. So, but I think he was involved kind of in escorting some military or some nuclear equipment, or maybe even transporting it. But what was the main claim that he made?
Yeah. Well, he was claiming that, excuse me, his claim was that he was flying out kind of by his lonesome in Vietnam, and he saw an object that was dark, and it didn't have any lights on when he was flying, and the object kind of, I guess, he felt as though the object was guiding him or flying,
protecting him. I think he said,
yeah,
right?
Protecting him, almost giving him like a comforting feeling.
And he said it was a saucer shaped object, right?
And he also made the claim that, I'm gonna pull it up, I want to get the dollar amount here. He also made the claim that there's a publication called JANAP 146E that has a section which states that no one is to share any information regarding the UFO phenomenon under penalty of a $10,000 fine and 10 years in prison. So he was, according to the YouTube thing, he said he was afraid to bring up these events to others, the ones that he experienced, due to, you know, fear of being made fun of or getting blackballed, so to speak. Another thing
which
that
makes,
stood out
to makes me, sense, you know.
Sure. And another thing that stood out to me with his interview is that I guess he was put in contact with the Japanese pilot from the Japan Airlines flight that we covered. We did an entire episode of the
Japanese. Yeah, he was the one that mentioned that. I couldn't remember if sorry to cut you off, but yeah, I couldn't remember if Greer had brought that up. I remember somebody had. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it was Lieutenant Fox who talked about experiencing this object, and then he was over Vietnam. And
do you remember with the Japanese Airlines one, like that the controller that basically confirmed that it was all true and everything at the base, because I think he's one of the witness testimonials that Stephen Greer has as well. I think I saw him.
Oh, cool.
So we should listen to that for sure. But sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to go out there. Keep going.
No, not at all. So he got in contact with the Japanese pilot who experienced the giant spherical UFO. Like mothership type thing over Anchorage, Alaska. And Lieutenant Fox, the way he described it, said he didn't want to come forward with his Vietnam stories during the time, especially because of he was afraid of what would happen to him. Because what essentially happened to the Japanese airline pilot was essentially relegated to desk duty. Didn't get to fly anymore because it's just the subject of UFOs, particularly in the military, is met with either ridicule or, hey, we don't talk about that kind of stuff. And right. If you do talk about that kind of stuff, you're either out of your gourd or you're going to compromise stuff. And either way, you're going to get yourself a desk job. And you're not going to fly anymore.
You know what I think is interesting is a lot of these craft are flying saucers, like literally saucer shaped flying objects. But I believe that term comes from, that could be an error of looking back at the narrative and saying like, oh, people call it a saucer because the first time it was reported, this pilot saw like some V-shaped craft actually that were zooming along doing impossible stuff, and he said they skipped through the air like a saucer,
right?
But they weren't actually saucer shaped, right? I don't know if we mentioned that before going over the history of this, but I don't know, it's just right. Interesting. And then and then people see saucer shaped objects after that. Maybe it's that mind connection, but
he said it was something like saucers being skipped across water, I believe is what is the phrase.
Okay, yeah.
Might have been how a Foo Fighter was described back in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. Correct us if we're wrong, please.
But yeah, these first two videos, right, they're basically ex-military just reporting some crazy stuff that was unexplainable to them that they saw, where they were either afraid to report it or it was just downplayed when they did report it, right? The next pilot, his name was Robert Blazina.
Yeah, and before we get into him real quick, the last thing I want to say about Lieutenant Fox is that he, you know, I really want to emphasize the fact that he said the object that he saw it was dark, and the object that he saw didn't have any lights on, and that's he got the impression that it didn't have lights on because whatever the object was didn't want to make Lieutenant Fox anxious or whatever. So I don't know if Lieutenant Fox is doing quite a bit of projecting here about about claiming to know what this object was doing, or if the object was somehow communicating to him telepathically that, hey, I'm here to guide you or protect you or ease your wariness, so to speak. Because he said he was like Fox was doing a lot of solo flights. I guess he was only 24 at the time, and he was alone. Like when you're flying,
and he says it can be spooky out there, right?
Yeah, sure.
I think he even says that. So yeah, he kind of hints that he had some kind of communication or connection with it and was getting these feelings, but he doesn't come out flat and say it, right? So
right. But he doesn't claim that the object hailed him or anything like that and said, hey, what's up? Didn't do anything like that.
But he definitely did not feel threatened by it. So
right. Which is a recurring theme. I can't say that I've never had a crazy UFO experience. And I can't, part of me thinks I would just freak out,
but yeah, I'm pretty sure I would. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. I just apologized. We don't apologize on the show here, Grant.
I'm sorry. I got you apologizing, man. But we got Robert Blazina, and this guy had a few things to say, I think. What stuck out to you about this one, though? A little clearer in your mind, I think. So.
Well, what stuck to me about this one is he said he was coming from, I believe it was Seattle to Sacramento. He had Blazino. I'm sorry, I got his name wrong. Is it Blazina?
Yeah, Blazina.
Blazina said he was in the late 50s. He was coming from – he's also a military pilot. He was coming from the Pacific Northwest down to Sacramento. And he saw like this orange – he and the pilot saw this orange an orange glow. And as they got closer to it, the orange glow got bigger. And what struck me was they're like, hey, let's just go chase this thing. Let's go see what it is. And so he said something along the lines of like, they redlined it. They made the airplane go as fast as they could. And so they were just chasing this thing. And he said they got over Redding, California. And I think they even started to descend, like they took it into a, not like a nosedive, but they took it into a descent, which made it go even faster. And right as he was going to be able to kind of form a visual opinion as to what this red ball was, the ball just accelerated straight up into the sky vertically in a matter of about 2 seconds. And he said he was reluctant to even mention, like, before they started chasing this thing, he said he was even reluctant to mention it to the pilot because he didn't want to be like, hey, you see that orange ball right there?
Right. And the other guy said it.
Yeah,
right?
And then the pilot was like, hey, do you notice anything weird right now? Right. Blazina's like, yeah, it's that glowing orange ball right there. It's not the sun. It's also important to mention that I think this happened between 10 p.m. and 12 midnight, something around there. So it was dark. There's no chance that it was the sunset.
It's probably a flare.
Yeah.
Or the other thing he brings up is the weather balloons, but that's for something else. Like that one I got a little confused by the narrative on, but they were saying like every day they could see this object, right?
I don't know if it was ever – I was a bit confused on that as well. You guys are going to have to listen to it for yourselves. Maybe it'll be clearer. Another unfortunate thing about these videos, and I hate to poop on people's artwork, is that there's a distracting soundtrack playing over these videos, and
it is really annoying. It's
pretty new agey music, and the music itself wouldn't be that bad if I was just trying to zone out and do some gardening or something, but when I'm trying to hear a UFO testimonial, I don't want to hear oppressively loud new age music playing. So right. It was a little bit unclear to Mr. Blazina was saying, but there was some stuff where he was he mentioned how there was an explanation given that some of the things he had seen over the United States at various times were like weather balloons. There was an object that had numerous other objects dancing around it, I guess, or almost orbiting it or something.
I believe what he said. Yeah. There was this round object that was really high up or something, but for some reason he knew it wasn't a weather balloon. I think it was too large. And
I think he said
disappear as well, but
yeah, and he said it was too high up. I always got the impression that weather balloons were designed to go super high up, but maybe I'm mistaken about that. That one I think was when he was doing some kind of mission from. He was returning from Germany, and he was going to Dover, Delaware, just a couple miles off the coast.
I thought he said like clockwork, like every time they could always see it. And then every night, like at a certain time, like right after sunset or right before sunset, it would drop out all these little objects that would scatter around and disappear. Again, I'm thinking of the movie Twister, and like, could that not be like some kind of weather balloon technology or something? But
I don't think they had those cool little orb sensors back in the 70s or whenever it was. When I don't know, I don't know how reliable Twister is for accuracy yeah. in terms of weather balloon stuff. But again, just the basic. My impression of Mr. Blazina is, I didn't think he was being deliberately misleading or anything like that. And again, you guys are gonna have to listen for yourselves because unfortunately it's difficult to hear. Maybe you guys can do a better job of hearing. My hearing is terrible, especially when there's background noise, and especially when that background noise is new age
distracting new age. Music
yeah
distracting mood music, I think it can definitely be described.
And here's and to be clear, the music on under the right circumstances not too bad, but right, not when I'm trying to hear somebody explain an extraordinary event.
And that's kind of a segue, but yeah, he does say like, yeah, he was told by the officials that it was a weather balloon. It was explained as a weather balloon, but then he did say that after it would drop and scatter those items, it would just shoot straight up. So that does seem a little sus, as they say.
Yes.
But to segue, so Gary Cooper, I mentioned, I dropped an article kind of about some of the claims he made about extraterrestrials, astronaut Gary Cooper. Mm. And, there's a little video embedded in that I was listening to, watching. And he says one time he did mistake an object and was pretty embarrassed because he went to like try and get closer to verify what it was, and it turned out to be a weather balloon. So I thought that was kind of funny.
It's actually Gordon Cooper, not Gary Cooper.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Gary Cooper is the famous actor, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Gordon Cooper, just a heads up.
And then, but I say that as a segue because another astronaut is the third testimonial that we went over, and that's Edgar Mitchell.
Right.
And this one's pretty compelling. I've got some thoughts on it, but what are your thoughts on it, Tom?
Let's see. What did I think about Edgar Mitchell? Again, I don't think he's being disingenuous. He seems to have a more an oddly spiritual take on the aliens. He made a point of saying that we've got no evidence that any aliens, that any ET, as he refers to them, mm-hmm. I guess he means extraterrestrial. He says we've got no direct evidence that any ETs are malevolent in any way, and he thinks that he takes kind of an evolutionary approach, that it is just our natural next step in evolution to try and reach for the stars and to try and it seems like I can't really put words in his mouth, but it seems like he wants to apply that logic to any other creature in the cosmos. Any other creature would eventually evolve from quote-unquote non-intelligent to intelligent to human levels of intelligent, and then would eventually want to reach toward the stars. So he seems to think that it's not at all unlikely that ET, so to speak, would come visit us.
Right. But he does – he makes the claim, too, that information is being hidden from the public, right? He asserts that a couple of times, and to direct questioning. What's interesting, and I got this from some of the comments in the YouTube. I'm always looking through the comments while I'm listening. You know, maybe it's bad because I get distracted, but I don't know. I don't know what he's allowed to say, but people take a lot from the fact that he's kind of hinting and directly saying, like, yes, there's stuff out there that the public is not aware of or something. So he's kind of disclosing classified information without really disclosing anything, you know. But again, that's a good cover, and we don't know where he's getting this idea from. Like, it could just be something because he read a few books and he's like, oh yeah, definitely. Like, it reminds me of I think his name was Paul Hellyer, the Canadian
That name sounds familiar.
Defense
yeah.
Minister, I believe.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh wow, this is a top level military official, and he's saying like there's definitely all these species here and blah blah blah. But then it's like, well, it's not because of his position that he thinks that, it's just like because of researching on the internet or whatever, you know. So
right.
Without him giving specific examples, like unless he says that, yeah, I saw some beings on the moon or saw some ships out there, then it's hard to know what to make of it, you know.
I mean, if he would have said something like, I saw some horses on Venus, then you know, I might. All right.
I wouldn't take him too serious. I would not take him seriously.
Oh, God. Once again, that's our Allie G joke for the episode. It's our mandatory Allie G joke, and I had to go for it.
It was a big influence on us.
I took a big swing, and I hear nothing but silence from our audience there. So I apologize to you guys.
I should have.
Wait a minute. We don't apologize on this show, Tom.
I do it all the time. And I'm sorry about that. But I was going to put the link to the Allie G Buzz Lightyear interview, Buzz Aldrin Light. Buzz Aldrin interview. And, I think it's so funny. If you haven't seen it yet, do yourself a favor and try and find it. But anyway, but yeah, I thought that was interesting. He's kind of saying the same narrative as Dr. Stephen Greer, I think. That might be a good way to sum it up, but I just thought,
I don't think he takes it as far as Greer in terms of, like, I didn't hear him say anything about contacting creatures via meditation, et cetera.
Well, yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, that's definitely true. But he kind of hints at the same kind of a conspiracy. I guess I'm drawing too much to it.
No. I don't think you're drawing too much at all in terms of that. He says, you know, there's a lot of stuff. And they're like, I think the interview, once again, it's one of those where there's some music playing in the background.
Nice piano music, I think.
Yeah, right? It is. But at the same time, there's distracting music playing in the background. And it's a bit, well, overpowering. So, what he says is, I think he's questioned about, I think the interviewer says something like, well, who said, and Mitchell just basically says, I'm not going to tell you who said it, or he's like, I'm not going to give you their name or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's like, he said, I can't tell you who said that.
I mean, it's easy to put gravitas to an astronaut saying like, yeah, we're being visited by other beings like that. It's interesting, you know?
Sure. Sure. And I mean, it's, I think someone who is, the honor of being an astronaut, so few people even get to be that honor or get to achieve right. that honor. I mean, you want to lend them credibility and take them at their word. So I guess I take your myth of saying like, hey, I can't tell you, but you know, someone told me, or I have some kind of insider knowledge. I guess I take his word with more. I tend to believe him more than someone say like Tom DeLong.
Right. Right. Yeah. I wish he would say specifically why he knows that or believes that, but maybe he can't, you know, that's an easy thing to assume is like, well, he just can't tell us. So he's doing the best he can, but,
you know, but I think he was
stories, you know?
Right. Well, I think he was long retired at that point. And if I'm not mistaken, let me double check. I think Edgar Mitchell passed away a few years ago. He's no longer with us. He passed away in 2016.
You know, but, I was trying to research Frederick Marshall Fox, too, and I think I found his obituary, which was kind of a bummer. It seemed to be described. I didn't really click on it or anything, but yeah. Anyway, that's a bummer of a way to end an episode there.
I got
some
not,
news. Some COVID news. I got my tested. I got tested, and I'll find out the results soon, as you guys have been hearing me cough off mic here. Hopefully it's off mic, not too loud. We had the a positive case at our office, so it's kind of interesting to watch how that plays out. But
yeah, interesting to say. Interesting is not the word I would say. I would say terrifying.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, and you know, it's COVID commentary time, as far as I'm concerned. I'm really starting to worry that we're opening up too soon, here in America, anyway. We're recording this on Monday, June 15th, And a lot of states are in various phases of reopening. In some states, it feels like they never closed in the first place. And I'm afraid we're going to see a massive spike. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope I'm wrong. Some errands this last weekend here. And yeah, the beaches, parks, and everything were packed. The roads were as busy as ever. Everyone was out running errands, basically. I went to Best Buy to get my iPhone fixed. I thought it was going to be kind of like they come up to my car and just grab it or something like that, but it really wasn't. A lot of people were parking and getting their equipment, like picking up their orders or whatever, but it was a full parking lot. It was a full store, you know.
Well, I found it very – yeah, certain businesses are very strict about – mask policies from what I hear. Everywhere I've gone is very cool in terms of like where I get my groceries, they're very, hey, you gotta stay 6 feet apart. We're not letting you in here without a mask, and I'm cool with that, you know? I'm not one of these people who's screaming about my liberties being taken away or anything like that for having to wear a mask. I don't mind that. As far as like inconvenience goes, don't care about that one bit. And if it means my mother and father or my elderly relatives are at less of a risk of getting this awful, awful disease, then I'm totally cool with it. And I saw a picture of a 20-year-old or 20-something, a healthy 20-something who passed away from COVID. The picture of their lung is just absolutely mortifying. It looks like a piece of dark gray cauliflower, this lung, and it's awful. Yeah. So anyway, on that happy note, I want to just say I really appreciate every one of you who's listening to this and who's taking precautions where you need to take precautions. I mean, I understand there are areas of the world that are pretty much as yet unaffected or have dealt with COVID pretty effectively. But sadly, there are still areas where it's not being taken seriously, and the death toll in America is still rising. And I just hope everyone is being careful. Again, this is a UFO podcast, but I'm unapologetic in imploring every one of you to just be safe and don't rest on your laurels, please.
Absolutely. love you guys. Take care of yourselves.
Yeah. Love you.
We'll see you next week.
Mwah.